supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Family is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. You know, step families are the fastest growing form of family in the United States, and building positive relationships in a step family takes time, and it can be complicated. Roles and rules have to be defined, competition for attention, jealousy, a history of rituals or emotional residue that involves an ex can and does complicate matters. But with time and proper guidance, there are ways of dealing effectively with these issues, and stepfamilies can and do forge healthy and strong intra-family relationships that are lasting. So, what helps families grow together? Our guest will tell us that. His name is Scott Browning. He's written Step Family Therapy, a 10-step clinical approach. He's written it with co-author Elise Artelt. Browning is a professor of psychology at Chestnut Hill College right here in Philly. Scott, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dr. Gottlieb.
Our phone number is 888-477-9499. We'd love to hear from you. If you are in a step family or I'm planning on starting one, give us a call, 888-477-9499. Scott, step families are always formed in the wake of either divorce or death. That automatically brings issues to step families that first families don't face.
Yeah, they are always in a situation where there's someone who is missing. And so at some sense, there's always a loss. There's always some idea that they're either going to try to replicate the first family or they have a loss that they feel is almost impossible to sort of recapture.
So how do we navigate through those waters? You've got a new marriage. Hopefully it's fresh. It's a fresh start. And yet there's these emotions.
I think what's interesting is that oftentimes these step families start, they've been dating, they get along well, and it feels very natural. I think that dating and remarriage don't really connect well, that it, strangely enough, it's not a great test run. Because when you're dating, you're not really conscious of discipline. You're not really thinking about how much affection there is. And so they are usually very surprised, and that's why we'll often see that step families go through a very tumultuous first couple of years. And so it's really necessary for us to help step families recognize what they're often going to hit. And as your introduction is completely correct, there are those families that do fantastically well, but many of them have much more tumultuous beginnings than they expect.
As, as a psychologist, you don't see the ones that do fantastically well. What do we know about them?
What we know about them is that, a couple things. One is that we do see them in the sense that being a part of the step family sort of professional community, I've run into many step families that are very, very healthy. But we also know from the research Mavis Hetherington did that after about 9 years taking a large population of undergraduates, she was unable to distinguish what young people were from step families and what young people were from first marriage families, that over time, they really look very similar.
Hmm. What are some common experiences step families have?
Well, one common experience is that they are very surprised by how difficult co-parenting is, that they go into it with the idea that co-parenting will not be difficult, and they're often shocked to find out that co-parenting is really an incredible challenge. They also find that suddenly there are loyalty issues that they really didn't expect, places where the child feels that it's inappropriate to feel good about their step-parent because they don't want to have their biological parent feel as though they've been betrayed.
Well, let's back up and talk about that a minute. Because step-families are formed because adults, hopefully, fall in love
right.
with one another. But that doesn't mean children fall in love, or is it? It's not even realistic to ask them to love.
I think it's a great point. I think that what we see is that it does occasionally, more than occasionally, happen, but it takes a lot of time, and you're absolutely right. The people who are in love are the couple, and so they often feel as though their love will triumph against all odds, and that love is something, as a therapist, we are often very fortunate to have. It gives us some stability when working with these families, and it gives them an effort and an interest in trying to keep going. But unfortunately, second marriages do divorce slightly higher than first marriages. And so what they find is that the divorce occurs quite quickly, usually within about 3 years, because it really takes about 5 years to develop a stepfamily. 4 to 5 years is really the time necessary. And most people would have pegged it to be a year. They don't expect that they're going to be in sort of readjusting. And clearly, the co-parenting issues are so much more challenging than they expect that suddenly these couples that are greatly in love, and as you're saying, the children don't necessarily feel love for the step-parent. In fact, the child may dislike the step-parent may dislike the child. What we have found that is most advantageous is if it's mutual relationships. In other words, if the child's willing to say, oh, that step-parent's okay, and the step-parent's willing to say, that child is fine. You know, I know, of course, it's a good kid. And that neither of them are looking for love, that's tolerable often.
You're addressing over and over just now expectations.
Yes.
And our expectations of our new spouses as co-parent, our expectations of kids, and vice versa. So what are reasonable expectations?
Reasonable expectations is that the step-parent comes in and really should be a monitor, should be someone that is very involved as a supportive other member in a relationship, understands the children, gets to know the kids, has concern, but doesn't walk in as the primary disciplinarian. So it is best to think that you're going to have someone there who can be a support rather than suddenly take over and become the boss. That one just blows up.
Yeah, inevitably. When I took a course years ago on stepfamilies, and the person who ran the course said that a step-parent is better off if they kind of take the position of uncle or aunt.
I think it's a good analogy. I think it's a good analogy to try to find. I think it's hard for people to figure that role out. But someone who is, in fact, legitimately concerned about the child, really can stand right by their spouse, and when discipline is offered, they could be arm in arm, they can really be a unit, but they can't be the one that's directing all the action. Of course, if the other parent isn't home and something happens, like a good aunt or uncle, someone would say something. They would certainly not let the house burn down. But shy of that, you really have to be careful about trying to take over. It's a very difficult situation.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking with Scott Browning about stepfamilies. Our number is 888-477-9499. If you are in a stepfamily or if you grew up in a stepfamily, give us a call. Tell us what worked and what doesn't work for you. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Scott, I want to back you up a little bit to the dating phase.
Mm-hmm.
At what point should the children meet the person you're dating?
Well, Dan, I think that's a great question. I mean, first of all, we know from the literature that to marry within 1 year of divorcing, it increases the likelihood of divorce tremendously. Secondly, you really shouldn't introduce more than two potential sort of future spouses to these kids. That I think kids will tolerate bonding with one boyfriend or girlfriend and then maybe still adjust to the second. But in my experience, they won't bond with the third. So you really, I don't mean they might know that you're dating someone, But in terms of really bringing them in, having them go to movies with you, having them come to dinner, start to become sort of connected with your family, children really won't be able to keep on making that bond. And so you have to be pretty sure that you're talking about someone who you really want to be with. And so I think it's fine for your kids to know you're dating, but I would be very reluctant to introduce them until you're quite certain that this is a person you want to stay with for a long time.
And is there a way you recommend of introducing them?
I think that once you really are sure this is the person you wish to have, because I think what happens, unfortunately, is a lot of people use that as the test. The woman, for example, might say, let's see if this guy gets along well with my kids. So she starts bringing him in as if that's the big test. Is he going to get along with these kids? And it's the wrong direction. It's really about her making sure that she's in love with this person, that this person's in love with her. And certainly it's helpful to see how he interacts with the kids. But most people can interact with kids pretty well over a couple dinners and look great. You know, it's really the rare person that is going to look that awkward or that sort of incapable of showing some affection to kids. So most people can be very comfortable for their first few times. And it's not really a great indicator. I think a better indicator is, do you really feel that this person is someone that you are stable with? Can you go through pre-remarital counseling and start to challenge each other? You brought up a very good point about expectations. There's so many false expectations out here. There, people really believe that the stepmother should be able to step in and become mom. You know, even though they don't expect her to take the term, and everyone knows now that no one can be a replacement mom per se, but they don't talk in detail about what is your role going to actually be? What does it really mean to be stepdad or stepmom? And those conversations have to happen.
Beforehand.
I think beforehand, and the research shows that pre-remarital counseling does help, just like remarital counseling or the program, such as PrEP or some of the pre-remarriage or pre-marriage educational workshops, they do work.
So I've got a friend of mine who's been dating a woman for a year or so, maybe more. They're quite fond of each other. They might want to, you know, form a step family, but he's worried about his daughters. He's got two early adolescent daughters, you know, right at or before puberty. He's worried about those relationships. He's been a kind of a single parent. He's very protective of them. Should he be worried?
Is the mother still in the picture at all?
Yes.
Okay. I'd be a little worried. You know, that's you're talking about one of the hotspot ages. Adolescent girls or pre-adolescent girls with stepmothers, there can be a lot of friction there. The literature shows that that population tends to be the most stressful.
That's stressful in any family.
Right. Then you just sort of add to it. Because stepmothers, it's a very hard role for stepmoms. Men can come in and be instrumental, can throw the ball around, can, you know, bring monies into the family. And they're generally perceived as being sort of okay. But women, we have a very hard time figuring out exactly how to sort of categorize women if they're not maternal. And so, stepmothers have this funny bind in that at one level, they're, you know, saying, I don't want to be your mom. The kids are saying, we don't want a mom, but we don't really know how to judge her if she's someone who's not very motherly. And so it's often a really difficult situation. Going to your friend's case, you know, I'd say that it would be helpful if his former wife was willing to sort of not be angry about the idea that he's dating, because that pressure can be intense. If she really makes it clear to her daughters that I don't want you to be connected to this woman, that can make it a lot harder.
Let's go to the phones. We've got Joanne on the line. Hi, Joanne.
Hello there.
Hi.
One of the things I'd like to comment on, being a parent in that type of a situation, I physically had six children, had two others, my stepchildren. Our boys were 2 months apart. Our girls were 5 months apart. So they all fell in a row there. What you're not considering is the difference in the way children are raised. If you take one set of family, my own, which were taught to be independent and rely on themselves even at a young age, and you take another batch of family that have been waited on hand and foot, that it is absolutely not a good situation, and it causes problems, yeah, between the parents, because it just isn't a good seat.
Well, Joanne, you bring up a very good point, and I'm sure, Scott, you're going to be able to address it. Thanks for your call, Joanne.
Yeah,
You're welcome. I'll take your comment
yes.
offline.
I think that you're absolutely right, Joanne, that what we often see, certainly as therapists working with stepfamilies, are that when kids have been brought up very differently, that is a tremendous challenge, because the kids notice the fact that they're raised differently, and each parent starts to sort of feel that the other parent is not quite doing it right. And so the couple conflict, even though, you know, Dr. Gottlieb is 100% right about the fact they're in love, even being love doesn't take away the idea that you start to feel as though your spouse is really treating your kids too strictly. Your spouse is having expectations that you don't agree with. And you're bringing up one of the big problems that can really explode stepfamilies, which is that these very separate expectations for different kids from different families. And if they're not able to begin to start to have the sense that we are one home with one set of rules, that we are somehow going to work this out as a family in formation, but still a family, then invariably the stress just gets higher and higher.
And, you know, you address the issue of expectations, and, you know, with that goes the issue of tolerance and respect.
Mm-hmm.
So we're addressing values, or Joanne brought up the issue of values. Mm-hmm. We have different values around the way children should be raised,
right.
But because your values aren't mine, then my job is to have respect for yours and tolerance for yours and just trust that your system works for you and it didn't work for me. And if we start there, then maybe we can have a dialogue.
I think you're exactly right, and that's a hard place to get to. That's where you really need to increase people's empathy, really have them understand why they're not sort of understanding each other, why they're not hearing each other. Because people in stepfamilies can often get quite frantic. They've been, as you've said, through a divorce or a death. They know that the end can come. They're sort of a little more traumatized, to use that word, at the idea that a marriage can fall apart in many cases. And so when they start to see the tension, rather than sort of doing exactly what you're saying, is taking that breath, understanding that two different systems might both be equally valid, what you start to notice is that they begin to become frantic and just wish that the other person would parent the way they're parenting so that that issue could go away.
And what the issue they're looking to go away is their own anxiety and vulnerability.
I think that's exactly right.
Yeah, and that doesn't go away without time and trust and faith. And, you know, time's going to fix it. Control doesn't fix it. Time does.
Time does, but it's part of why with stepfamily therapy, as we've created, my co-author and I, it really is about strengthening each subsystem so that hopefully the stronger subsystems can help this system, the larger system, the stepfamily itself and beyond, sort of tolerate the fact that you're going to have one or two relationships that are still troubling.
We're going to have to take a brief break for our winter pledge drive. But when we come back, I do want to talk about this business of subsystems and how they work and how stepfamily therapy works. We're talking with Scott Browning on stepfamilies, and our number is 888-477-9499. When it comes to stepfamilies, well, he wrote the book. He's written Stepfamily Therapy, a 10-step approach, with co-author Elise Artelt. And he's a professor at Chestnut Hill College in Philadelphia. I'm going to pass the phones over to our executive producer, Mike and Scott, and Tanya English, my friend over there, to help us with our winter fund drive. Mike and Tanya?
Thank you, Dan. This is really very useful advice. Tanya and I have been listening, and even though neither one of us is involved in a stepfamily situation, we've been talking recently about just how many people we know who are struggling with issues related to stepfamily. So this has just been wonderful kind of step-by-step advice. Here are some of the issues that you might encounter. Here's what you could do. And that's what Voices really does. It takes a topic that people struggle with and then takes a look, well, what can we do about it? What is the issue at hand? And what's some thoughtful advice that will help people? That's the kind of thing that Voices in the Family brings to you each and every week. And we're hoping right now that you will be the next person to support it at 1-888-345-9499.
Mike, and I love this topic because when I think about stepfamilies, I think about these used-to-be strangers who all of a sudden are our friends and our families, and we're kind of going through that right now at WHYY. We have a whole new bunch of listeners from New Jersey. They're newcomers. They've maybe been sitting back and listening to us and getting to know us, and now's the time to kind of step up and make our relationship official. You can do that by becoming a member. If it's been a few months, if we've proven ourselves, please call 888-345-9499.
That's a whole new listenership that we've opened up to, which is wonderful. We've really expanded our reach in New Jersey, and that's great. We're hearing from a lot of people in New Jersey who are listening and who are thanking us and who are happy that we're there. Right now, we're asking all of our new friends to step forward and all of our old friends to step forward again at 1-888-345-9499. Tanya, you just got your renewal notice from WHYY, right?
I did, and it came from the very persuasive Christine Dempsey. We all listen to her and have heard her in the morning. And she made the pitch that this is one bill that I don't have to pay. It's different from my mortgage. It's different from the light bill. And frankly, if I don't put the check in the mail, WHYY is still going to be here. I am going to choose to do that because it is an invoice of sorts. It's an invoice for hours and hours of great programming and local news coverage. So if you have gotten a notice recently or maybe put it in a drawer, this is a time to either drag it out or, even better than that, call us right now. Call 888-345-9499.
So you're going to put that check in the mail there?
I'm just going to call. It's easier. Or whyy.org.
I always pledge online. I think pledging online is really, it's so super simple, and it's a quick thing to do. 1-888-345-9499. We're hoping to hear from 25 people during Voices in the Family. You could be the next person to make a difference, to support everything that we do here. Voices in the Family has been on the air for many years. I've been involved with the show, Tanya, for almost 15 years now.
Great.
And the show was here long before I came on board. So this is a testament to listener support over the years. It's a testament that you want this show to be here. You want this kind of thoughtful advice to help you deal with everyday issues. So right now is the time to step forward. 1-888-345-9499 or online at whyy.org. And Tanya, as you were saying, we have a lot of new listeners, and a challenge during this membership drive is to really start converting them to step into the WHYY family and to become members.
For sure. And you know, that kind of legacy, 15 years and even longer for Dr. Dan, is consistency with the changing media landscape. We're a partner that's going to be here for you. We've been here for you. Step up and make a commitment to us by whyy.org or call us at 888-345-9499.
And we have a lot of thank you gifts that relate to some of the work that Dan has done outside of WHYY. He has several books, for example, Learning from the Hard. One is called Voices in the Family. So ask for a membership gift if that's what you would like, or you can always just make a pledge and ask not to get a gift. That's fine too. You will get your WHYY member benefits, and that's the important part. Plus, you'll know that you have done your part to support the station and to make conversations like the one we're having today on stepfamilies possible. So make that call, 1-888-345-9499. And thank you.
Independence Blue Cross supports WHYY and is proud to launch the new Independence Blue Cross Foundation, whose mission is to transform healthcare in the communities they serve. The Foundation's Nurses for Tomorrow program is designed to enhance the healthcare workforce of the future by strengthening nursing programs in our region today. The Foundation provides $1 million in grants to 24 local nursing programs to address the shortage of nurses and nurse educators that threaten the quality and affordability of healthcare in this region. IBXFoundation.org.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about stepfamilies today with Dr. Scott Browning. He has written Step Family Therapy, and he's a professor of psychology at Chestnut Hill College here in Philly. We'd love to hear from you. Our number is 888-477-9499. If you are in a step family or grew up in one, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. Scott, before our break, you talked about subsystems in families, and you know, that sounds dangerously close to psycho talk, psycho babble.
All it's saying is that rather than seeing everybody together, you really are starting by seeing smaller groups. You're seeing the couple alone. You're seeing the biological parent and the and his or her children alone. But you're doing this always with the idea that information can be shared. You make it immediately apparent to them that you're not going to be holding the confidence, that you need to be, the therapist needs to be aware of places where there's been misinformation and where there might have been mistakes made that you can try to help correct. The idea being to literally strengthen each small group, make sure the couple is completely stable, make sure that the parent and his or her own child are stable. Start to move towards helping the parent maybe work with the divorced parent if they have a lot of trouble going on. That you really look at it as a model whereby you're trying to strengthen small groups so that eventually the whole subsystem, the whole super system, which would be the stepfamily itself, is completely able to function. They can tolerate the pushes and pulls of stepfamily living.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Pam on the line. Hi, Pam.
Hello, Dan.
Hi.
Thank you. The best advice I had ever gotten for being a stepmom was house rules, to develop house rules. And it was difficult, but my husband and I sat down and said, all right, we want to make rules that no matter who is here applies, whether it's my stepson or whether it's niece, nephew, whoever comes in the house, this is what is expected of them. And it was the best thing that ever happened for us. We're 33 years going strong, and I have a wonderful relationship with my stepson, and I think he grew up quite fine. It took the pressure off of me being the bad mom or the bad person.
That's a great idea. Could you give us some example of house rules?
Well, when anybody comes in this house, A, there's no cursing. There's B, there's no throwing balls. No, you know, you take your shoes off. You wash your hands, you put the dishes away. This is what's expected of you. You don't leave your clothes on the floor. You don't play in the house with toys and balls with things that could break something. You know, just common sense kind of things that you would expect from anyone.
Well, obviously that worked. 32 years. It's I think you have your own area of expertise here when it comes to step families. So thanks so much for your call, and enjoy.
Yes, we are. Thank you. And I've given that advice to a number of people, and it certainly helps.
Yeah. So let's go to the expert.
Pam's right. In other words, doing house rules is absolutely the way to go, because you have to have a sense that neither person is taking over all of the discipline. Now, I know this may sound contradictory, because we talked about the idea that the biological parent should be the primary disciplinarian for the first couple of years. But that doesn't mean there aren't house rules. In other words, it might mean that even in the situation that Pam described, the husband and wife just agree on the fact that there will be house rules. It might be that maybe in the beginning, Pam implemented more of those rules than her husband did with her own kids, and vice versa, her husband, if he had kids in that step family. But the idea of house rules absolutely takes away the idea that there is sort of one person who is unreasonable and one person is too lax.
You've written about normalizing step families.
And that was really an area that I think that step families taught us a lot about. There's a couple things here. First of all, in the old days, it really wasn't clear that step families were unique from first marriage families, and that had to be determined with a lot of research. You know, Hetherington Bray and a number of the Coleman and Ganong, along with the famous sort of pioneer researchers, had to initially establish they're different. And yes, they are. These families are different. But then you started to have a lot of step family groups that were forming. And they started mentioning the fact that they'd been to therapists, and therapists didn't quite understand how unique their needs were. And so it's become very clear now, with a great deal of literature out there, that there are uniquenesses, and you have to normalize these differences. In other words, step families have to really understand that a lot of what they're going through, the stresses, the strains, the developmental stages that they're going through, they are normal for them. And so even though you may marry this man or you marry this woman and suddenly feel as though they're much more of a tyrant than you expected when you were dating them, when you start talking to other stepfamilies, you find that many of them admit, I felt the same way about my parent, my partner. They seemed to be stricter than I thought they were when we first got together. And there can be various reasons for this happening. But I think it's incredibly important for stepfamilies to realize that there is a literature out there, and it can be very accessible. It's on the web as well, that helps them understand their situation is, in fact, typical.
Where can they find it?
The National Step Family Resource Center, NSRC, out of Auburn University, is a particularly good website that's run strictly by people who, this is not a for-profit, it's strictly done by people who are in the field and passionate about helping step families.
Great resource. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Alex on the line. Hi, Alex.
Hi. Could you repeat that national...
National Step Family Resource...
Okay. Let me write it down. National...
Step Family...
Step Family...
Resource...
Resource...
Center.
Center. Yes. .com.
.com.
Okay. My question is, I'm a grandfather. My daughter remarried. And the second husband is constantly giving orders to the 11-year-old son of my daughter, and she thinks it's okay, and he is just he's just crying from all his orders.
Yeah, I mean, Alex, I think you're bringing up an incredibly interesting point, which is that, you know, as a grandparent watching this, it's very hard. And your daughter is not asking her husband to change here. However, I don't know how long they've been married, but if this continues for a long period of time...
They've been married for a year.
Okay. I would suspect that she may start to become less sort of open to the fact of what he's doing. And she may start to feel that she finds his sort of particular type of parenting annoying and troubling. If the child, obviously I don't know your daughter, but she will probably see her son's reactions and start to worry eventually about the fact that, you know, if he really is becoming someone who's crying all the time, I would be nervous about that. I think that you watching as a grandparent are probably correct that it's a very difficult
situation.
Well,
let me chime in here.
Yeah, please.
As a grandparent,
right.
I'm even more worried as a grandparent that my daughter won't notice
right.
that this will continue. And that, as a,
she doesn't.
Yeah, as a grandparent, that's my greatest fear. Because, you know, Alex said or implied that she's okay with it.
And I guess I'm wondering if this way, if when you speak to your daughter, does she at least acknowledge that there are aspects of it that she wishes that he would change?
No. And the 11-year-old son is not really crying, but he's very unhappy. I can just see it.
And he is not able to convey that to his mom?
I don't know what they discuss. You know, he spent some time with his real father, and but he is so unhappy. And the second husband, you know, we sit down to eat, and he says, you know, don't touch the spoon. And after we finish eating, he says, you know, take the dishes away and do it quickly and on and on.
Well, it's not uncommon to hear about a stepfather being stricter than people feel comfortable with. The part I'm surprised about is that it's not creating some stress for your daughter, but that she may have her own reasons there. Frankly, I do think that it's the sort of situation that step-family therapy is actually useful for if she was concerned.
If she was concerned.
Right.
Alex, the one thing I've advised other grandparents to do, and I've done it myself when Sam is distressed and he's not comfortable talking to his parents, I spend more time with them. And, you know, Alex, spend more time with your grandson, and so that he can have somebody, some place that he feels safe with, that he feels understood by. And You know, that's so very, very important. So I hope he has that in his life. Well, we've got to take another short break. We've been talking with Scott Browning about step families, and we'd like to hear from you if you're in a step family. Our number is 888-477-9499. Scott's a professor of psychology at Chestnut Hill College in Philadelphia. As I said earlier, we are in our winter pledge drive, and we're looking for 25 of my dear friends to call in. And on the receiving end of those calls are my other dear friends, Mike and Scott and Tanya English. Mike and Tanya, hi there.
Hey, Dan.
Hi, Dan. Thank you. And we're hoping that you will be the next person to make a pledge at 1-888-345-9499, or you can go online to whyy.org. This has been really one of those shows where you can take away a lot of advice, different scenarios play out, but really useful advice broken down into small steps, into doable things, and delivered in a non-judgmental form, because that's sometimes when I watch other programs where there are, you know, television psychologists and so on, it sometimes seems just very judgmental the way the advice is doled out. So this is the kind of advice that is useful to you. Right now we're asking you to support it with a membership pledge.
Yeah, and it's the kind of advice that you would give friends and family. You know, these are, when Dr. Dan talks, I feel like, you know, that's the kind of information that I'm going to get from an uncle or someone that I really trust. You said, you know, Voices in the Family has been around, you know, like more than 20 years, and it takes that kind of commitment to this community, to the Delaware Valley, to bond those relationships. You can make that relationship even stronger by becoming a member. There are two ways to do that. Go online to whyy.org or call 888-345-9499. You know, Mike, and we've been talking a lot about adding these five radio stations in the southern New Jersey area. You've probably heard of the identifications, that long list of stations. So that means we've expanded our coverage area. But in addition to that, we've really expanded our reporting. Then you're going to find that reporters are in the backyard in New Jersey. Phil Gregory kind of anchors that from Trenton. But we're also doing increasing number of neighborhood stories, arts and culture stories, health stories from New Jersey.
We are. And right now we're asking especially our New Jersey members to step forward and to join the fold here at WHYY as a member. We have volunteers standing by from the Mainline School Night. They provide adult enrichment programs on the Mainline. They have a wide variety of courses. Today they are here helping us out, taking your calls. They've given up their time. Right now we're asking you to give up some of your time to make that call. 1-888-345-9499 or online at whyy.org. Every membership pledge that we get counts. We have a very ambitious goal, Tanya, that in part speaks to our expanded reach. So we're reaching more people, so now we're also hoping to convert more people into WHYY members. But it is an ambitious goal. We're hoping for 8,000 members to join us during this drive.
Just this hour, we're looking for 25. And honestly, what it's going to take is some people who are already members to step up their commitment. You can add a gift, or you can increase your pledge. A lot of people do that by pledging $10 a month. That's a good way that you can make that a little easier. Call 888-345-9499, and our volunteers will walk you through that.
Through the process, there are different membership levels, different membership gifts that people can pick. Whatever you choose to do, whatever feels comfortable. Some people do $5 a month. Some people pledge it all at once, and then it's done. But make sure your membership card is up to date, because sometimes, you know, we were talking earlier, you do get that letter in the mail and you think, yeah, I'll do that. And then all of a sudden you realize, oh, wow, you know, I totally forgot to do that.
Yep.
So check your membership card. Make sure it's current. Even if it is current, if you're feeling especially generous today, make that extra pledge. 1-888-345-9499. Or you can always pledge for a friend. I always love that idea. 1-888-345-9499. And thank you so much.
Fox Chase Cancer Center supports WHYY. Fox Chase has posted 5-year survival rates for major cancers on its website. Survival rates at Fox Chase are compared to those at community hospitals across the nation. This is but one measure of quality to help you make decisions about cancer care. At Fox Chase, compassionate care is much more than a number. It's part of their mission to prevail over cancer. More at foxchase.org. Fox Chase Cancer Center. Hearts plus minds.
And we're back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb. We're talking with Scott Browning, Professor Scott Browning, about stepfamily. He's co-authored Step Family Therapy, a 10-step clinical approach. His co-author is Elise Artelt. And Scott's a professor of psychology at Chestnut Hill College. Scott, you alluded before our break to stages step families go through. What are they? Are they predictable? Yeah.
Yes. Patricia Papernow in 1993 wrote a wonderful book called Becoming a Step Family, where she really does lay out a series of stages, starting with sort of the fantasy level and moving into immersion, eventually sort of going from there to moving towards sort of a mutuality and then resolution. But it's a very interesting model of how step families may get caught in one stage. They may do well with a couple stages, and then there's one area where they simply don't negotiate it well. And so anyone interested in that area, Papernow's book is excellent.
How does a step family know when they need therapy?
I think that, like any family, when a step family realizes that the level of stress in the family has gotten to the point that the home is unpleasant, when the couple realizes they can't really talk without going into an argument, and they start to distance from each other, and the children are sort of distancing from their own parents or from the step-parent. Those are all good reasons, and that therapy really can be helpful.
Yeah, I want to talk about how. Let's go to the phones. We've got Gunther on the line. Gunther, hi, you're on Voices. Do we have Gunther up there, Al?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, hi, Gunther.
Okay, I wanted to say, I went through a step-parenting relationship from beginning to end. I got into a relationship with my wife when she had a young child, and I'd have to say the first thing that was important is that I went into it with an open heart. I think that was so important that she and her son were part of the same package, and that, you know, you had to make that commitment. So I took that on. The second part of it was that I was the disciplinarian in the relationship. His father was around and quite a bit. And so we had to work out quite a few value differences and things of that sort. And the way we handled it, or the way I handled it, was that I said, when you're with me, we do it my way. And when you're with your father, you do it his way. And it wasn't complicated. It was like having two fathers instead of having a replacement father. And I thought that was a really helpful way of working with it.
How old was he? Is he?
When I met him, he was 3 or 4, and I took him all the way through adulthood.
Hmm. That's interesting, Scott, because, you know, a 3-year-old almost doesn't know any different. That becomes their lives, having two.
Exactly. Days. I mean, Gunther brings up a very interesting point, is that it really is different when you're really with a child who's quite young. Because a child who's quite young can make that adaptation very easily. They really can say there's dad's home, and then there's being with mom and Gunther, and that adjustment is not a difficult one for many young people. And so Gunther's description, I think, is absolutely very accurate, that what you'll often see is that the child, you know, Gunther said the right thing when he said he knew he was coming into a family with his wife and a son, and that he embraced both of them. And that is so critical. You're not just marrying a woman. In this case, you're marrying a woman who has a child, and that's important. And that this child learned to see Gunther as an incredibly important parental figure who was different from his dad, but also very important in his own way. And therefore, by the time he reached adolescence, when it would normally be more difficult, Gunther already had a very established relationship.
Yeah, Gunther, thanks for your call. Tell us, Scott, how therapy helps.
I think therapy helps because, in part, it does let people understand what they're going through is normal. It also helps because you explain to families that this is a series of subsystems, that they really are separate groups, and that we can help each of the separate groups sort of become more stable. And there's no reason that some of the traditions and some of the sort of habits of each of the families can't be continued into this new family. But step family therapy also helps people realize that they have to be aware of the fact that children are a certain developmental level. And if they're adolescents, they're thinking about moving away from the parents a little bit. And oftentimes, if someone remarries and these kids are adolescents, because they want to convince themselves that this remarriage is stable and good, they'll try to bring everyone together and have family meals all the time and go out all the time, and it's too much. These kids are in a developmental stage that's trying to push away from it. Family therapy is also, step-family therapy is also important because it really addresses helping people understand the perspective of the other. And so often in step-families, it's really hard to know exactly why your spouse is feeling the way they're feeling unless you're really willing to hear their perspective. And so often we're more interested in trying to convert someone than to really hear them. And family therapy works for that, as well as helping to correct mistaken beliefs.
Hmm. Let's go back to the lines. We've got Angel on the line.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I have two quick comments. I was married twice, actually. Unfortunately, I'm divorced both times. But the first time, I had a great time as a stepmom, and the boy was 10, and he was very accepting of me, and it was wonderful. Unfortunately, that marriage ended. I decided to try marriage again and inherited three stepchildren, 17, 14, and 10, and that one was very, very difficult because the two younger ones did not accept me or the fact that now there were rules in the house where before there weren't because their father didn't have any when I really met him. And so it was a very tough go. I don't know if family therapy would have helped us or not, actually.
Scott?
All I can say is that it's a chance that it would have. That probably what we would have done is I would have probably met with you and your husband, made it very clear for you to have a chance to have a forum to really tell him how difficult it is to have this situation with the discipline in the home, hopefully get him to the point where he could really understand the role he was playing in that and begin to try to address it. And then maybe have him, he may have had feelings of abandoning his own kids or who knows what issues may have been going on there. So possibly having him have work with his own children that would stabilize that feeling, but really support you. I think that it would have been the role of stepfamily therapy to have really worked with you and have your husband understand how difficult it is to be a stepmother. I think that that by itself often carries a lot of weight, but certainly who knows what would have worked. And there are stepfamilies that are just too difficult.
Well, and how difficult it also is or was for Angel's second husband, too, about, you know, his loyalty to his kids and bringing her values in that conflict with his. And that's what I would hope would happen in therapy. You talked about vulnerability
right
in your book. And if people could kind of be safe enough to talk about their vulnerability, that changes everything.
It often can. So I really disagree that it wouldn't have worked, but then again, no one can guarantee it. But I think that everyone has a position in stepfamily therapy. By making it subsystem, it's making it safer. You're literally saying, we're not going to have conversations that you don't want your child to hear in front of them, because it literally puts the parent in the middle.
So let me put you on a tough spot here. So if I'm in a step family and we're having difficulties, should I go to a regular family therapist? Or
I would say that you have every right to interview a regular family therapist and say, have you gotten training in step families? I think that so often family therapists think, because I know systems theory, because I know family therapy, I can do this work. And what we have found is that when research was done investigating people who've gone to family therapy as step families, the thing they reported the most often as being disappointing was that family therapists assumed that they knew step families and that that model would work for the step families, and they often it doesn't.
And therefore, the issue of normalizing then becomes critical, because once you understand that it's a lot more complicated and has far more subsystems and different expectations, then you can stop trying to force that family to behave a certain way.
That's exactly right. And to really let them know that this developmental process is going to take a little longer. If they can make it to that fourth year, they have a much better shot. Then the divorce rate drops, and it really does match first marriages. So it's almost like stepfamily therapy is to help people get past those rough first few years.
Erwin Gottman, the famous marital researcher, discovered that successful marriages come down to one thing. That's empathy for each other, understanding each other's psychology. I'm sure that can be generalized for
Step. And in fact, I'd say it's even more important in the step family. I mean, as important as it is in any couple, in the step family, they really don't understand why is this man in a stepfather family, why is he being so critical? The man looks at his wife and is thinking, why is she being so permissive? They really have to understand the way in which these people view these children or the child. And without that empathy, they're constantly at cross purposes.
Right. That's an excellent point. Well, Scott, we're out of time. I'm so grateful that you came out. This is such an important topic.
Thank you, Dan.
So
I really appreciate it.
Scott Browning has written Step Family Therapy, a 10-step clinical approach. He co-authored the book with Elise Artelt. And next week on Voices in the Family, we're going to be talking with Tamar Chansky. She's a psychologist here in the Philadelphia area, and she's written Freeing Yourself from Anxiety. Well, now, my friends, we've got some important business to take care of. My good friends over there in Pledge Central are making headway, but still need your help. As I said, it's our winter membership drive. So would you please become a member or renew your membership? Show us your support for this kind of programming, for this kind of station. It only takes a couple of minutes, and it'll go a long way to help us bring you terrific programming 24/7, and thank you for that online pledge. I just heard that ding. Mike and Scott and Tanya English, bring us up to date on how it's going over there.
Hey, Dan. It's going well. We are hoping for a goal of 25 people during this hour. We will have to hear from 15 more people to make that happen. I think we can do it, Tanya, if everybody steps up right now. All the fans of Voices in the Family, call us at 1-888-345-9499 or pledge online at whyy.org. And Tanya, I hear from people all the time who love Dr. Dan and who say, Oh, I always rely on him. I like his approach to life, I like his wisdom, all those things. So right now, turn that love that you feel for Dr. Dan into a phone call.
Yeah, it's a partnership, really. You know, he has been here for us for more than 20 years, and we're hoping that you guys will be here. We need a financial commitment from you. Please step up and be a member, be a partner with us. One of the things that we have done in the last year or so since we started Newsworks.org is we have partnered with different community groups to really expand our coverage. Please, you be our partner, be a member, step up, call 888-345-9499, or you can go online to whyy.org. There's two ways to do that. Our volunteers are waiting.
They are standing by from the mainline school night. They have come here giving up part of their day. It's a beautiful day. Sun is shining. They are here waiting for your call, helping us out at WHYY. Right now, we're asking you to help out as well with a financial commitment. Voices in the Family is really one of our flagship signature programs. It's the kind of conversation that you don't hear anywhere else. It takes time to develop a conversation, to get to a difficult issue, to hear what people are really going through. It's easy to say, oh, there are five steps to tackle this problem. Here you go. 1, 2, 3. It doesn't work. You know, if it did work, we would all be fabulously successful, thin, smart, and wonderful and organized.
Aren't we already?